sideline. He goes bouncing up the Seahawks. And another big play with Kayvon Wallace making the stop there.
Now back to overtime with Grandy, Madsen, and Bennett with sounds from the locker room and your calls at 888-957-9570. Overtime continues now.
Welcome back. Niners knock off the Seahawks 36-24, the final score. They're now 3-3, and as we currently stand first place in the NFC West, they are 3-3 with the Seahawks, but because of this win tonight, they have the tiebreaker for the moment. The Arizona Cardinals, though, they could move into first place in the NFC West if they were to win on Sunday, because they would also be 3-3, and they would have the tiebreaker in that one. But for the time being, the 49ers are first place in the NFC West, and that is good news. I wanted to go back really quick, guys. It was something that I think it was Filmo Mike, who maybe an hour ago now.
Shout out to Filmo Mike.
Yeah, great call as always. Talking about DK Metcalf, talking about DK versus Debo. DK is soft, man. Oh my God.
So this is going to sound like, I promise this relates to
you.
I do a podcast, Candlestick Chronicles. Uh-huh. We had Fred Warner on the pod over the offseason. And I asked him about, remember last year when he got into it with DK Metcalf at Levi Stadium?
Yeah.
And DK got in his face. We were talking about trash talking on the field and stuff, and I brought that up, and he said, DK doesn't really talk trash. He just goes, I'm big. And that's the extent of his trash talking. So I think I'm with you, Mark. I think DK Metcalf is just kind of soft. I don't know. He's obviously a good player, but I've never been that impressed with him. I don't know if the Niners just have his number, or if they just know how to get under his skin to make him ineffective. But I think that's just kind of it. I don't think he has that kind of smoke. He's just big and strong, and that's kind of the extent of what he has to offer.
Yeah, I'll go to you in a sec, Sterling, but there was a couple of plays. There was one where he had a deep ball down the middle part of the field. It was late in the first half. He was open. He had a couple of steps on, it was George Odom who was in for Mustafa at that point. And it wasn't the perfect throw by Geno. He didn't lead him. And if he led him, it's a touchdown. DK had steps on George Odom. The ball is not totally in front of him, but it's catchable. And DK kind of just fades away and doesn't even ever actively try to go up and get the ball. He just kind of sat there, waited for the ball to come into his chest. And because of that, George Odom managed to break it up. There's no aggression from DK Metcalf. And with his speed, his size, his athleticism, his strength, it's just shocking to see. And he's obviously a very talented receiver, but there was a couple of moments Sterling in this game where I was just shocked by DK Metcalf's lack of just aggressiveness and physicality and lack of trying hard. It shocked me.
His physique is very aesthetics only. He never actually uses it to make plays, and this may be kind of a low blow, but I always go back to his mouth guard when he first got into the league. It was a pacifier. He plays like a baby. When you have dogs like Fred Warner and in previous iterations, Mooney Ward last year on Thanksgiving, just locking him down, which, those are all great players, right? But you're DK Metcalf, you're playing at home, you should have some pride, and I'm going to come out and I'm going to establish myself. I am the number one receiver on the Seattle Seahawks, and sometimes it feels like he is so easy to erase from big games.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I can think of DK taking over a game was Dallas last year. I think it was in Dallas, and that's one game out of the 18-week season. I don't think he's ever had a big game really against San Francisco. The last time he's really hurt the Niners was at home last year when he was covered by Ambry Thomas on the first drive of the game. They make a switch. He catches two balls the rest of the game. He is, despite his physique, one of the easiest receivers to erase almost off the field, to a point of Kenneth Walker is having a better game than he was, and Kenneth Walker didn't have a great game by any means. He wasn't bad, but San Francisco knew Seattle wanted to run the football, and they took care of it. It's like DK, for as big as he is, plays very, very small.
Yeah. You brought up Kenneth Walker. I mean, we talked about the Niners' defense. How about just specifically the run defense? Man, it was really, really good. Kenneth Walker, 14 carries for 32 yards. 2.3 a carry for a really good running back. Zach Charbonnet, 5 for 20. He had a better yards per carry on fewer attempts. But all in all, the Seattle Seahawks rushing attack, 20 carries, 52 yards, 2.6 per carry.
With them running no huddle at times, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I mean, we can talk all we want about the 36 points scored by the offense, and this time they weren't aided by a special teams touchdown, and there was a moment where the special teams did set them up with good field position and all that, and the offense was good. I'm not saying they weren't good. The defense was the star of this game for me, and you look no further than DK Metcalf's line. 11 targets, 3 catches. 11 targets, 3 catches, 48 yards. And aside from the 30-yard bomb he got to begin the game, 2 catches on 10 targets for 18 yards the rest of the game. And I think those both came, like, in the fourth quarter when they were running hurry up and the Niners were content giving them 8 yards underneath every single time because they just didn't want to allow a 40-yard touchdown. They wanted to kill some clock, and they did that. But also the run game, the run defense, 20 carries, 52 yards for the Seahawks, 2.6 per carry. We can go back to week one against the Jets, which was a solid defensive performance, and Fred Warner was superhuman week two in the Vikings. Everyone else defensively was bad. This was, I think, far and away for me the best defense for the 49ers all season long, and it should earn Nick Sorensen a little bit of a break from all the conversations around his job. Obviously, through 6 weeks, it hasn't been sterling, no pun intended, all season long, but tonight was very, very good, and it seemed like Nick Sorensen had an upper hand against the Seahawks and Ryan Grubb, their new offensive coordinator, almost all night long.
So the whole thing in Seattle this week, in talking to people who follow the team and cover the team, was like their lack of commitment to the run game. Yeah. I think they ran it 7 times. They had like 68 plays and 7 runs against the Giants.
Kenneth Walker, RB1, 5 carries last week.
So the whole thing was a commitment to the run. It was so clear early on tonight it wasn't going to work, and they just were, it was so old school. It was like, no, we're establishing the run. It's like, all right, go ahead. It's really clear the Niners are going to sell out to stop this, and they did. They did a great job, and that's where Nick Bosa, like, we're going to bet there's going to be tweets tomorrow about all the pressures. I've already seen one from Next Gen Stats, who had him down for 14 pressures tonight, which is the most in a game since Nick Bosa in 2022 against the Rams, and he also had 14.
Wow.
So you're going to see all that stuff over the next couple of days. But what he did in the run game today was just as impressive. He was so freaking good. And Seattle just, it was like, especially in the second half, it was like every time they ran it, it was like, well, thanks. 2nd and 8. Enjoy that. Oh, ran it again. All right, 3rd and 6. There you go. It just, it was never really effective, and they never even broke one. The longest run of the night was 9 yards by Zach Charbonnet. That's magnificent. Really, really nice job by Nick Sorensen and the defensive line as well, and just everybody on the defense. That was a great job.
And to kind of marry the offense and the defense, that's why it was so important to get out to an early lead. Don't let Seattle, who you know wants to run the football, try to do that. And they certainly tried, but you want to force Geno to throw the football. And he did. And there was some good from him tonight, sure, but there was 2 big interceptions early in this game when it felt like, okay, you know, how is San Francisco's defense going to play? But back to Kyle's point, Nick Bosa was just a monster today. Mm-hmm. We had been begging the first roughly 4 weeks of the season for Nick Bosa to show up and introduce himself, and the Patriots game, maybe less or so, but the Cardinals game gets the interception, gets pressures, and was doing his job. And tonight, Nick Bosa has, I guess you can say, gotten himself on the right path the last few weeks, and this team's going to need him. And tonight, he was the ultimate game changer. When maybe your linebackers aren't playing great, you have some injuries here or there, like, again, no Javon Hargrave. You don't have Yetur Gross-Matos. Like, you got to have your boys step up. Nick Bosa was not even changing just the running game or the passing game. He was breaking up screen passes to Noah Fant in pivotal moments, and you're like, he's everywhere. He's like playing linebacker, but he's also playing defensive end. He was so good tonight.
Yeah, there's a tweet, a text on the Comcast Business text line from the 707, and this is a couple of hours ago. 707, first of all, love the 707, shout out. I hope you're still listening. It caught my eye. I forgot to bring it up until now, though. 707 says, Nick Bosa is overrated. Almost sacks aren't good enough for the top paid defensive end in the NFL. First of all, 707, I... I understand where you're coming from. Like, you look at the box score, and it's like, Bosa, what did you do today? Four tackles, two QB hits, that's it. Nothing else in the box score. Okay, fair enough. He didn't get a sack. How many times did he impact a play that, Geno Smith made? He was the reason that Malik Mustafa had the interception in the first half. The Seattle Seahawks, for the first drive of the game, they were going down the field. That was honestly one of the Niners' worst defensive possessions of the entire game. Nick Bosa nearly single-handedly wrecked it because he forced a wayward throw that was intended for Tyler Lockett, went way over his head, and Mustafa, playing safety, was able to pick it off. That does not happen without Nick Bosa. Nick Bosa, multiple times, getting, he didn't get any tackles for loss, but the reason other Niners got tackles for loss was because he dominated the edge, forced Kenneth Walker to try to cut back inside, and who was waiting there, whether it was Fred Warner or Malik Collins, or at times Devondre Campbell, who still, not very good, but the overall defense was better. Nick Bosa, nearly every single good play by the Niners defense, Nick Bosa was involved in some way, and for a majority of them, he was the driving force behind why the Niners won the, those individual reps.
So the 49ers, the Seahawks score to make it 23-17. The 49ers come out and they punt. They go three and out. The Seahawks come back. Zach Charbonnet for 3 yards, Zach Charbonnet for 9 yards. They have a first and 10 at their own 30.
Okay.
Geno Smith throws an incompletion where there's an ineligible man downfield caused by Nick Bosa, who, as you talked about, read the screen and just knocked the tight end down. Was like, nope, there's not a play here. Ineligible man downfield because he was ready for the screen. Okay. So Seahawks now have a second and 10 because the Niners declined the penalty. Zach Charbonnet goes up the middle for no gain because Nick Bosa crashes down and hits him for no gain. That brings up a third and 10 where Geno Smith's pass goes incomplete because Nick Bosa was hitting him as he was throwing. And the Seahawks punt. In a spot in the game where they have all the momentum, where the 49ers desperately need a stop, because if they don't get one and Seattle scores a touchdown, they are now ahead. It is a six-point game. And Nick Bosa, on three consecutive plays, just asserted his will, took over the game, and forced a punt by himself.
Yep.
So we can talk sacks. We can talk pressures. You can say, oh, you did close sacks don't count. Except they do. On third and 10, when you get near a sack and the quarterback just throws it away because he doesn't want to get sacked, that counts. That counts. Nick Bosa was awesome tonight. It is so hard to play a better game than he did.
Yeah.
Well, and that drive you're speaking of where he himself almost forces a three and out, that is the drive following the challenge by Kyle Shanahan they don't get.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, okay, everything's not going San Francisco's way. Seattle has all the momentum. Your defense is tired. Your offense can't drive the football. The replay center can't even get things right for you. What else could go wrong? And Nick Bosa's like, you know what? I'm going to put this drive on my back, whether it's a sack or not. And even on that drive on third and 10, he almost stripped Geno Smith of the football. He was like, oh, crap, and I pick it back up. I was like, throw it anywhere I want to. It was like, oh, my gosh. Like, Nick Bosa, I don't want to say single-handedly, but at least in this drive, single-handedly potentially changed the outcome for San Francisco.
Yeah.
And you get late in the games like this, you're up by 6 points. What else do you want him to do? You want three sacks in a row? Nick Bosa wants that. But he'll take those three plays in a row, get the ball back for the offense, and get some points to win the game.
You know what's crazy? We've got like less than 10 minutes left, and we have game balls to hand out, so we don't have a ton of time to dive into this. We have been on the air for nearly 3 hours, and Brock Purdy threw for 255 yards, three touchdowns, and not turn the ball over, and I don't know if we've ever said his name.
Yeah, he's fine.
he missed a few throws, no doubt. The first touchdown to George Kittle.
Absolutely incredible throw
to the right front pylon. Mm-hmm. Defender all around George Kittle. And these haters, for lack of a better word, that say Brock Purdy can't throw outside the numbers. You know how hard that throw is from the left hash all the way out to the front right pylon on a line with a defender draped around your intended target. Absolutely picture perfect throw. You could not have dropped it in a better spot. And George Kittle, I mean, as a tight end, elite foot control, body control, getting both his feet in for a touchdown. That was an incredible play. Brock missed a handful of throws. He was not perfect in this game. But we're getting to a point with Brock where he throws three touchdowns, does not turn the ball over, and it's kind of like, yeah, that's Brock. Like, that was never the conversation with pass natter quarterbacks. I'm not going to name anybody by name. If any other 49er quarterback did not turn the ball over and threw for three touchdowns, that was the leading story on overtime here on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, man, and just he did a good job tonight, I thought, of extending plays within the confines of the game. It didn't feel like he was running around. I think there was one play I pointed out, like, man, he just spun into a pressure. Like,
chill a little
he
bit.
He could have stepped up. Yeah. But, I mean, for the most part, he's extending plays. He's throwing the ball down the field. I thought he was better at, like, checking down tonight and taking easier throws instead of trying to push everything into the intermediate and deep areas. I have really no complaints for Purdy tonight. Did he miss a couple of throws? Yeah, but every quarterback does that every Sunday. So Brock was awesome. I don't know, Sterling, maybe you think otherwise, but
I thought he was great.
Perfect.
Now, was he perfect? No, but but I guess coming off a loss against the Cardinals where he threw two picks, and you know, there have been times where he has struggled with holding on to the football in the pocket sometimes. Yeah. Okay, you know, not to say like what Brock are we gonna get this game, like I think everyone has a full, you know, full confidence in Purdy to come out and do a great job, but you know, if there is a game you're going to struggle, Seattle on the road, this is a game. And Brock, through his couple years of starting now, has a history of coming into Seattle and playing a heck of a game. Rookie season, broken ribs, clinch a division. Last year, Thanksgiving, gets a big win. This game is another big win. I think it is the eighth time in his career he has thrown for 255 or 250-plus yards and three touchdowns. That's crazy. And that, to me, like that stat line is one I've grown just... It's so common to read that. Oh, it's a common Purdy game now. Three touchdowns, no picks, and 129 rating. Like, that to me is a quintessential Brock Purdy game where, yeah, he's not perfect, but pivotal moments, backs against the wall, he will be the one to help take you to victory. Yeah, the defense will help him, but again, that first touchdown was just it was a laser. It was just right where it needed to be. And you're like, if that's how Brock is playing with the precision he's playing with, it's going to be a long day for Seattle, which it wasn't a long day, but it wasn't the easiest day for them either.
Yeah. How about this? Most games with a passer rating of 120 or higher in a player's first three seasons in NFL history.
I love this.
Brock Purdy tied with Russell Wilson for the most ever. 12 such games. Brock Purdy did not start to begin his first season, and checks notes, it's only week 6 of his third season. So I guarantee you, by the time his third season is over, he will stand alone for the most games with a passer rating of 120 or more in a player's first three seasons in NFL history, and there's a number of other numbers we can go through, but that's one that stood out to me. Brock Purdy, just on an incredible beginning to his NFL career. Okay, guys, it's time for Game Balls. As always, we'll start on the offensive side of the football, and we will start with you, Kyle. Offensive game ball number one. We'll give out two for each side. Who gets your first game ball on the offense, Kyle?
I got to give one to Isaac Arendo, man. 10 carries, 99 yards. He rips off the 76-yard run that kind of seals it on a play that we had been talking about all night. Like, man, how does he never hit that? Like, they keep going to it. Maybe he's just not got it. Maybe it's just another fourth-round running back that they missed on, or mid-round running back that they missed on. And then in the biggest spot, like the biggest carry of his career, he rips off a 76-yard run that probably should have gone for a touchdown. Shout out to Isaac Arendo, man. That was big time.
Yeah, like the pick. Sterling, game ball on offense for you.
Sorry, Sterling. That was your guy. That's my bad.
sorry, it's okay. I'll pick the guy that got in the end zone twice tonight. How about George Kittle? 5 catches, 58 yards. Again, 2 clutch touchdowns. Got San Francisco on the board in the red zone twice tonight, which has been their Achilles heel offensively all year long. Got the first touchdown. Almost had the last touchdown, but darn you, Kyle Juszczyk and Isaac Arendo. But in 13 games against the Seahawks in his career, George Kittle has 56 catches for over 800 yards and 7 touchdowns.
Not bad.
It's pretty good. And talk about a game to come out and just... assert yourself on a defense you've dominated through 13 games, 12 games into your NFL career. Like, George Kittle has been eating the Seahawks defense alive since he got into the NFL. Another big game in primetime for him, so he'll get my game ball.
Yeah, I like it. A couple of good picks there. I'll give the... I guess there's a couple of other touchdown scores. I'll go with the first touchdown score in this ball game, and that's Deebo Samuel. He only had three catches, but he turns those three catches into 102 yards. Of course, the big one was the touchdown, 76 yards out. He got behind the corner, found a soft spot in the zone. The safety came over to try to help, and maybe he got caught between trying to make a play on the ball or hit Deebo, wanted to avoid a late hit or defensive pass interference. Whatever the reason, Deebo made the catch. A good ball from Purdy. He made a man miss, and then, as you guys are talking about, he's faster than you think he is, especially when he has the ball in his hands and his sights set on the end zone. Deebo Samuel turned on the Jets, and he turned that into a touchdown to get the Niners going. Three catches, 102 yards, and that touchdown. He also had four carries for 15 yards. Not the most dominant day for Deebo, but you felt like in a game like this against the Seahawks in Seattle, Thursday Night Football, those are the days when Deebo Samuel is at his best, and for me, he gets a game ball. I know I said two game balls on each side of the ball for each of us. We don't have time for that, so let's go over to defense now. Mm-hmm. I'll go first, and I'll take the easy one. We've already given every single reason why. I mean, it's Nick Bosa. He was the best player on defense. Apologies, Fred Warner. You were also very good. I'm sure one of these fine gents will give you a game ball because you're deserving of it. But Nick Bosa was the game record that the Niners are paying him to be. And even though it does not show up in the stat sheet, I plead with all you Niner fans, know that Nick Bosa was the driving force behind the Niners' best defensive performance of the season. Don't let the 24 points scare you either. This defense was great, and Nick Bosa was reason number one. So he gets my game ball. Sterling, who gets your game ball on defense?
How about the young man that set things up for the offense to give you a larger lead in the fourth quarter that changed the momentum in this game? Renardo Green, a guy that I think has a lot of Mooney Ward traits, steps in for Mooney Ward and is a big part of shutting down DK Metcalf. And you look at his stats, it's not going to be like, oh my goodness, they're going to wow you, but six tackles, two pass deflections, and again, that big INT to set up a big touchdown for San Francisco. So I think it may have been his first NFL career start. If I'm wrong, it's certainly his second, but a big game for Renardo Green. Agent Zero, if you will, in this game for him. Yeah. So a nice, nice game.
Like the pick. Kyle, who gets your defensive game ball?
Yeah, we're wrestling Agent Zero back from Gilbert Arenas, who sucks. That's a great work by you, Sterling. Darrell Luter Jr. with the forced fumble. No, I'm joking.
Rocky scene.
George
wow.
Odom. No, I'm going to go a little hipster here. George Odom gets
okay.
my game ball.
Okay.
Dude Heck stayed yeah. ready, so he was the starter throughout training camp at strong
wow,
safety with Talanoa Hufanga out. Yeah, no, I'm dead serious, Chris. So he was the starter through training camp, loses that job when Talanoa Hufanga comes back, obviously, but then gets leapfrogged by Malik Mustafa.
Yeah.
Mustafa gets hurt tonight with Talanoa Hufanga already out. George Odom comes in. A couple of big pass breakups, including one in the end zone. Dude stayed ready, and salute to him.
Okay. I like it. I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting someone to pick Fred Warner, so I'll give him a quick...
I'm bored with Fred Warner.
I mean, I guess that's an obvious one. Give him a quick shout-out. Who else deserves a shout defensively? Lenore deserves a shout.
Mustafa.
Diamador Lenore was very good. Mustafa. Malik Mustafa deserves a shout-out as well.
Deebo was awesome.
Deebo, he's just consistently good
now. His PFF grade tomorrow is going to be through the roof.
He is consistently, consistently good.
That one run stop he had where he knifed in and just...
Oh, my God.
That was so sick.
As I told you guys as we were watching the game, those Oregon Ducks, they love playing in Seattle.
Boy, dude,
you know
man.
What I'm talking
go
about.
Go Ducks! Go Ducks!
You are right about that. They love playing in Seattle. Yeah. All right, that's all we got time for today. It was awesome to be back on overtime with a Niner win. 36-24 is the final score. Now we got some time off because the Niners are now enjoying a mini bye as they gear up for the Seahawks in week number 7. We'll have overtime for you coming up Sunday afternoon after that game. Looking forward to that. Kyle, Sterling, been a pleasure as always. Awesome hanging out with you all night long. Shout out to everyone behind the scenes as well. Carter and Steven and Cam in the back. We got a Friday, Victory Friday edition of 95.7 The Game coming up tomorrow. Looking forward to that. But until then, for Kyle, for Sterling, my name is Mark Randy signing off. Congrats on a win to the 49ers, and thanks for tuning in to Overtime here on 95.7 The Game.
Overtime with Grandy, Madsen, and Bennett, with sounds from the locker room and your calls at 888-957-9570. Overtime continues now.
How about that for the fourth round pick in the 2024 NFL Draft? Isaac Guerrero played collegiately at Wisconsin and Louisville. 10 carries, 99 yards, none bigger than that 76-yard run down the right side late in the fourth quarter. Led to Kyle Juszczyk's 6-yard touchdown run, which was the finishing touches on the 49ers' 36-24 win over the Seattle Seahawks. And as we welcome you back to overtime here on 95.7 The Game, Mark Randy, Kyle Matt, and Sterling Bennett with you. It was a day full of standout moments and performances by 49er rookies, and I don't necessarily say you hoped to see that, because that means you had injuries and you needed some of those other guys to step up, but in a situation where you are forced to play some young guys a little bit more than you were hoping for, you could hope for nothing better than this, where you had awesome game ceiling, game changing, game breaking moments from a handful of your rookies, and the early returns on that 2024 draft class. Great, and you saw it here in week 6.
That's a great point by you when people are calling in and talking about, yeah, Mark Grandy, heck of a radio guy. When people are talking about their dissatisfaction with the win, I think that's an important thing to remember. It's not just Christian McCaffrey. We had a caller bring up, I need to see him perform consistently without Christian McCaffrey. Okay, yeah, no, that's fine. Christian McCaffrey being out is a pretty big deal. They need to figure it out in the red zone without him, and they did tonight, 3 for 5. But no Javon Hargrave, no Yeter Gross-Matos. That is a starter and your second best pass rusher, and a regular rotational player who can play on the inside and outside.
No Dre Greenlaw.
It was a Pro Bowl caliber, one of the 10 best inside linebackers in the game, or off-ball linebackers in the game. You are without Tre'Varius Ward, All-Pro last season. You are without Talanoa Hufanga, All-Pro 2 seasons ago. Malik Mustafa, his replacement, leaves the game early in the second half or late in the first half.
Yeah.
So you have George Odom out there for the most part running around. On offense, it's you have no Christian McCaffrey. You have Jordan Mason who gets banged up early on in that game. You have George Kittle who's been dealing with injury stuff. He is limited in practice all week. Like, there's just
Aaron Banks was in and out. Yep, did not return at some point in the fourth quarter.
Really good point. They're just banged up, and they're trying to piece this thing together. And the fact that they are able to play as well as they did despite that adversity, it's like, man, this team gets a little healthy and starts playing better. Like, that's why there's context to this. And I don't know, I find, outside of the nitpick about Brian Schneider, and you can, you know, oh, this play call or that play call, I don't know how you can be super dissatisfied with a win like that.
Well, go back to last season when Hufanga got hurt. Jaya Brown came in. The first play, the Buccaneers take a shot downfield, and it's like, oh, God, like, this guy's our safety. You know, he's a rookie, whatever. But then fast forward to February. He picks off Mahomes to open the second half, and it's the mistakes he made when he first came in October and November. And then it's a success that he had, time to grow, time to learn, to get ready for moments like that. So, yeah, it sucks not to have CMC and Ward, Hufanga, and many others. But it's when you watch young guys like Mustafa and Guerrero and Green step up, they're going to be asked to do that, yes, more so this year, but in bigger moments if you get to the playoffs. Hey, guys, this guy's down. You got to step up. So, yeah, tonight's a great game, not just for, well, yes, hyper-focused on this game itself. You got the win, you're 3-3, and it's great stuff. But, you know, your mind can start to wander. Okay, you know, this is a big win for young players to get confidence in themselves and let their coaches have confidence in them, in the system in which they're playing in. So, it's a big game, yes, for tonight, but also like for the future. Like you have to have Mustafa and Grendo and Renardo Green. Like the expectation is they're going to be starters likely next year, or at least on the defensive side with Mustafa and Green. So it's a big game for them to get massive plays, spark the defense, make pivotal clutch plays as well, because even this year alone, fast forward to Buffalo and Green Bay on the road, what if they're playing out there? They're going to be hopefully built better for those moments and more prepared for those moments because of games like this.
Just piggybacking off of that real quick, I think the other thing we have to do is recalibrate the expectations for this year's team a little bit, because sure, the best version of this year's Niners team is not going to look like it did last year.
Nope.
They just don't have the same level of talent. They're not going to be a top five defense. They're just not. Right now, their offense is going to be worse than it was when Christian McCaffrey was on the field. No matter what combination of players you're putting out there, no matter how Brock Purdy is playing or not playing, like Christian McCaffrey is the offensive player of the year. This isn't random starting running back. This isn't Joe Mixon, right?
Like, he legitimately could have been the MVP of the league as a running back.
Yeah, was he number three in MVP voting?
Yes, right.
Yeah, because Brock was four.
He's four. Oh, okay, yep, you got it, yep.
Yeah, Brock was four, Christian was three, however that went. But like him being out is going to fundamentally change their offense. We're seeing that. We're seeing the ebbs and flows of that and them figuring this out. And then defensively, I don't think they're not going to be a top five unit. It's can they get stops in a big spot? Can you get a big interception from Renardo Green here? And can you get a strip sack from Nick Bosa there to help kind of put games away in big spots? Could you just get off the field on third down? Like that's what it's going to kind of come down to, and I think that's going to be something we grapple with throughout the year is where is the ceiling for this team? Because I think the ceiling for this team is still Super Bowl, but how it looks, I think, is going to be pretty dramatically different.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a good point. And like you can say, well, if they're not as talented as they were last year, like they were the, for the majority of the season, they were the best team in the NFL last year. But not always the best team in the NFL goes on to win the Super Bowl. Like the Chiefs, did they have the most talent on their roster last year? No. No, they did not. Like, you don't have to be the best team throughout the course of the season and have the most talent to get on. You just got to catch fire at the right time, catch a little bit of breaks here and there, play your best down the stretch, get lucky in a February game in New Orleans, and you're Super Bowl champs. Like, there are easier paths to doing it, maybe, and it's by getting the one seed and getting the bye and getting the job done and defending your home field. But just because you might not be like they were last year, maybe suddenly the odds-on favorite and the best team throughout the course of the year, that does not mean that you are not going to have a chance to win the Super Bowl. Like, if the best team, the best regular season team, won the Super Bowl every year or was the champion, there would be no playoffs. Like there's a lot of different ways to have a successful season, and the Niners haven't gotten it done yet down the stretch, but just because this one is feeling a little bit different than it did last year doesn't mean they're not going to be able to get it done. We talked about some of the injuries, some of the youngsters filling in for some of those injured 49ers and some of their standout performances. Let's hear from their head coach, Kyle Shanahan, post-game in Seattle after the Niners 36-24 win over the Seattle Seahawks. Here is his full presser earlier tonight as the Niners knock off the Seahawks, improve to 3-3. Here's Coach Shanahan postgame tonight.
Ankle never returned. Aaron Banks cramps, and Matt Wright had a shoulder. Go ahead.
Any X-rays on Mustafa?
No, they believe it was a low. Yeah.
Is there a point there when you don't have Mason, obviously you don't have Christian, you have all the other guys we could list, and you're going, how are we band-aiding this together, or you just think, I got the guys, we're going to win this thing anyway?
I mean, with Debo also, I mean, towards the end, on the last possession, what's his name? Drawing a blank. Taylor, he got hurt, so I was afraid that we were down to our last one with Isaac, especially when he got that long run. It was smart of him, giving that touchdown to Juice. But I did get worried right then. Before that, though, we had enough guys, especially with Debo being able to help out and do all that stuff, too, so we were all right.
Was it Mason? He went back in. Did he aggravate something?
Yeah, he thought he was going to be all right. He went back in, and it just hurt him too much, so he went out, I think that was the first play. And then he was out just in case of emergency.
The fact that he could have come in an emergency, does that suggest It's not serious?
I don't know. You never know. I mean, adrenaline on these days, I mean, during games, a little bit different. We'll find out more tomorrow when that's down and get the x-rays and stuff.
What was going through your mind when you guys had the 20-point lead, give up the kickoff, and then next thing you know, they have the ball with a chance to take the lead?
I'm not going to go to what's happened on our last two losses. It was just staying locked in, not trying to get any negative feelings, and just trying to do it one play at a time. You try to keep our team that way, but it's not like I talked to a bunch of people right then. So just calling plays and stuff, you don't try to think that way. Our goal is to be locked in the entire game, regardless of what the score was, and I thought the guys played like that.
Considering how, like, the moment and how much you needed it, how that throw from Hurry to Kittle, the first touchdown,
which one? There's two of them. The first one, it was awesome. That was a long third down. We're obviously struggling in the red zone to make a big play like that. I think it was third and goal from, I want to say, the 10. But that was huge. It was a dime right in the corner. It was a hell of a route and catch by George. And then I thought the second one was just as impressive. We called a lookie to BA. They played a coverage where two people were on him, and he went across the board and had a hell of a throw to George.
Can we ask Brock about some of the red zone stuff? He said maybe he's just got to be more decisive, something like that. You know, pull the trigger. Did you have that conversation with him, and do you think he did that more tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I think the hard thing with the red zone is there's not one theme. There's a few plays, and Brock's saying that because there's a few plays he could have been more decisive on and had. But that's not the whole red zone struggles. But when you struggle running the ball, didn't have a lot of great looks, and then you miss a few that we could have scored on, and Brock's going to always own up to that stuff, but that wasn't really the theme. He was real decisive today, made two big-time throws there on third down. And it was a step in the right direction, at least.
The challenge that you made, that you didn't win there, what were you told in terms of what angle they saw, whoever, you know, let you know? And then what was the explanation that they didn't?
It was awesome by Hamp. He said he could tell by how the guy's hand moved that the ball hit him. And then that's all he saw. But he couldn't 100% see the ball. But he said you could tell how the hand moved. And with it being Thursday night football, I thought for sure they'd have a bunch of camera angles. So once he believed that it happened, we threw it, thinking we'd get some better angles. And then they just told me that he didn't. And then about two minutes later, I heard all the guys in the box freaking out, saying they saw another angle and it wasn't fumble. So
the official told you that they didn't have either.
Yeah, they only know what they see. So they didn't see, I think, what everyone else saw on TV. Hamp. Yeah. Brian Hampton.
With all the offensive stuff, I mean, Renardo Green's interception there came at a really good time. So just how did he make that play, and just what did you see of it?
That was huge. I mean, I just saw it looked like they sailed it a little bit over DK or maybe underthrew it, and he cut in front of him. It was a hell of a play by him. Hell of a job by Malik, too, getting in the pick. I thought a rookie stepped up big time today, all of them. But Renardo was huge coming in for Mooney. You know, Mooney was a game-time decision. Tried to get him going. He tried to go, but the workout didn't go well before the game, and Renardo and the whole defense stepped it up.
Your team has faced some of these games before, you know, early in the season when things aren't going right, has won a lot of them. Is that something you communicate to them, or do you feel it in a week like this where this team just has the feeling that it's going to be able to pull a game like this out?
No, I mean, you know that we're sick about those two losses that we had, and we know, you know, I talk about some hard losses are harder than others, and when you feel like you had those won, especially division games, that's made us sick about it. And you know, we've gone on a stretch here the last 2 years where we've won a lot of games in a row, and a lot of the fourth quarters and some of those win strings these last 2 years haven't been that tight. Guys have been able to relax a little bit and stuff, and we've been talking about how these two losses are a reminder on how the NFL works, and I think we got a little spoiled in that way of just human nature of sometimes feeling too relaxed, and you can never feel too relaxed. I thought we played real well in the second half, but that doesn't mean it's easy to win. That's how it works. We played well. They played well. They came back and made some plays, which made it tighter, and I was glad that our guys could fight through that, realize that games are really never over where you can just sit and chill in the fourth quarter. You got to go beginning to the end, and we got that experience today.
What did you think about Miranda? Did you feel like he was on the verge of breaking a big one?
You always feel like guys are close. I mean, we were running the ball pretty well all day. When they're going to really commit to stopping the run and try to get in those eight-man fronts, we got a good bounce read where we got outside. And usually when there's not two safeties there, which I don't think there were, you break them. And he's got the speed to do it. said he's a hair, an eyelash slower than Raheem, and they had a pretty fast guy chasing him, but he said he wanted to give that to Juice, so it ended up working out well. Got to run more time off the clock.
You want to see him slide there at the end?
Hell no, we want him to score, and I don't think he slid, and that's what he's claiming. I think he got, I think 21's a fast player, and he got him a little bit there at the end, I think. I mean, I'll see it, you guys saw it, but it ended up working out better for us.
Given how long Mooney has matched up with DK, was there some pre-game concern about how you're going to deal with Metcalf?
No, not really. I mean, it's, you know, he wouldn't have done that anyways tonight, just, you know, being on an injury. And I think D-Mo's one of the best corners in the league. I love D-Mo, and we got a young rookie in Renardo stepping up. I think Ike's done a hell of a job, and I think we got a lot of players in our secondary.
How close was it with Tre'Davious? I mean, we saw him.
It was close enough to where it was a game-time decision. You know, he went and worked out, and it was close, but going to go.
Another supplement team's blunder, I guess you would say. What can you do about that now? You were, you know, there's like one a game now. How do you go in there? Do you get them all? What can happen now?
I mean, I thought the special teams made some plays today. They got a fumble for us, a huge recovery, which I forget whether that led to a field goal or touchdown. Last week they scored a touchdown with a block kick, returned for a touchdown. I thought, you know, we didn't have a great kickoff, and from what I saw live, we had an unblocked guy who missed a tackle, and then they hit the lane. So we got to get better at tackling. We'd love to get a better kickoff and stuff, and we got to keep challenging ourselves as coaches, our players, everybody. You know, especially when you got some guys down on defense, it does. You guys can see that, and it's even worse on special teams when that happens. But we got to do better. But I was still happy they made some plays today too.
Are you challenging the kicker to make a tackle?
Hell no. I don't. I don't know how I feel about that anymore. When they break through and they're the only line left, I would never be the coach that says just let them score. But dang, that's 2 weeks in a row, and I just got his name last night, and Matt was unbelievable today. He was 3 for 3 on field goals, and that was huge for him to stop him. I mean, it looked like they could have scored if he wasn't there, so I just hope he's all right.
You got his name last night, the Irish game, the U.S. last night?
I mean, the first time I've seen him, yeah. But, yeah, you guys, I mean, I don't waste thoughts on stuff that I don't need to know. You know, like, same with all of your injury questions. I really don't learn stuff I don't need to know. So,
last one, strategy to have him kick it right at the goal line. You wanted it to be further than that.
Yeah, you'd like that. And it was something that, you know, he was struggling with a little bit. So when that happens, you try to get more air on it so it gives our guys time to get down there. But it didn't work.
All right, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, that was Kyle Shanahan postgame. 36-24, the final for the 49ers. Was that Kyle Shanahan talking about how he doesn't need to know the names of all of his players, at least the new ones, like his new kicker, who was great today, by the way?
Kyle Shanahan, congratulations to everybody out there who's super plugged into 49ers news. You knew the kicker before Kyle Shanahan did.
He said, I don't need to waste time knowing things I don't need to know. Like the name of one of your key players in a Thursday night divisional game?
The guy you might have to trot out to kick a game-winning field goal?
Yeah, what does he say? Hey, kick. Get out there.
Hey, number 35, which, first of all, ew. Hey, number 35, get out there. That's wild.
That's good.
Also, I'm calling shenanigans on Kyle Shanahan.
On what specifically?
Shanahanigans? Yeah, nice, dude.
Nice.
He said he was talking about, he got asked the kind of obvious question about, do those thoughts creep in as they cut it to 6 points?
Mm, yeah.
And he said, I'm not going to go to our last two games. Like, I'm thinking about the next play, da 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 da. It's like, no. We all saw how you reacted when Isaac Arendo broke that run. We all saw it. Like, that was a sigh of relief. He was more tense than any of us. He knew exactly what was going down. He knew exactly, like, hey, we can't run this into the line three times. And that's why they ran the outside zone. They wanted to score there. That's a home run play for them. And that's why they ran that, because he knew, hey, if we run this into the line three times and punt it back to them, they're going to get it with, like, more than a minute left. And he knew. He was there. He was thinking about
it. He was there.
He's lying to all of us. And not knowing his kicker's name, apparently.
I love how when they asked him, again, do you go back to, like, the last two games? What do you do? He was like, I don't know. They got us a touchdown last week. It's like, what do you mean you don't know? Like, I get it. They have performed, I guess you could say, better in the last two games. They got you a touchdown last week. They got you a forced fumble this week tonight against Seattle. But I don't think that just, like, undoes all the bad they've done this year. And you could argue they have lost you two games so far. It's like, you could be 4-1 if your special teams unit was 20th, not ranked 32nd in football. It's like, what do you mean you don't know what to do, Kyle? Like, yes, you do.
Yep.
There's a clear and obvious decision of someone's got to go. Just say goodbye. It's not hard. It's not that hard.
Yeah. So other updates from Shanahan. We might have missed the very beginning in terms of some of the injury reports with the running back Jordan Mason with the shoulder. He said he was good to go at halftime, came back in, got one carry. He said it was a little too painful for him, but he said Jordan Mason was good to go the rest of the game as the emergency running back if they needed him. They did not end up needing him, although it looked like they might for a certain point when Grenda was struggling through much of that second half. He, of course, broke that 76-yarder, and the rest is history. So it looks like maybe he has avoided something serious. Shanahan did say we'll know more tomorrow, so keep an eye and an ear out here on 95.7 The Game for an update on that. Malik Mustafa, who left the game in the second half as well, dealing with a low ankle sprain. Good news that it's not a high ankle sprain, a low ankle sprain. He has since tweeted, Mustafa has, that we're going to be good. So it also seems like he's avoided something major there. And then Aaron Banks, who left the game a couple of times, including for the final couple of drives, I believe. Spencer Burford came in for him. He's been dealing with cramps. So as of now, maybe not anything terribly major, but you never know how things are going to react once you get back on a plane. You fly back to Santa Clara, and they'll all get MRIs, or they'll be looked at a little more closely tomorrow, and we'll get you updates, of course, here on 95.7 The Game. The other funny moment was, he said that in the locker room, Isaac Guerrero, on his 76-yard run that could have been a touchdown, he's saying Guerrero told him that he slid because he wanted to make sure Kyle Juszczyk got a touchdown. Kyle Shanahan saying, I think he's just hiding the fact that he's embarrassed that he got caught from behind because he's supposed to be this speedy guy. It looked to me like he slid. I think his thought was he wanted to kill some clock. The Seahawks, though, still had three timeouts. Score the touchdown, make it a two-score game. Don't worry about any kind of fumbled snap or something like that. But a funny moment there with Kyle Shanahan talking about Isaac Guerrero and why the hell he slid down there at the end of the play.
Really good. I couldn't tell. I don't know what you guys thought. It looked like he got tripped up to me, and that was just how he went down.
That's like what Kyle Shanahan thinks.
Like, it was like, yeah, he was moving and wondering in his head as he was running, should I slide down? Is a smart play to slide down here? Is the veteran move to slide down? If I get in the end zone, am I going to get in trouble? And then he got his feet. Devin Witherspoon dove at his feet,
yeah,
and he just kind of got hit and went, okay, I'm just going to go down. I'm not going to try and stumble in. That's what I think happened. I think he wasn't 100% sure of the situation. But this is also a good example of why 40 times don't matter. Because Isaac Guerrero ripped off a 4.33 40-yard dash. Devin Witherspoon, the fastest one I can find at his pro day, April 5th of 2023, ran a 4.39. And then he ran 4.42 and 4.46 at a private workout in Illinois.
He's so slow.
Yeah, and he caught Isaac Guerrero, who's supposed to run a 4.33. It's almost like that exercise
the fastest guy in the draft this year
does not indicate actual game speed. Crazy.
Well, it's like Debo, right? Debo, like you said earlier, Kyle, no one catches him from behind. It's just
fastest guy in the league.
He's a bigger guy. He's running 4.4. Like, just football, it just doesn't matter how fast you run as long as you can get down there. But I have a question too. Both, I know there's a break coming up, but what do we consider Kyle Juszczyk and George Kittle's touchdown celebration with their wives? I know they have the Lambeau leap. Do they call it the Lumen leap? Is that what we're calling this one?
Ew,
or no?
Gross.
Yeah, definitely not that. You know what? Let's take the commercial break to brainstorm. We'll come back with ideas
Levi's
on
leap?
The other side.
Well, it wasn't at Levi's.
Levi's?
Levi's?
Use these next 6 minutes and we'll figure something out. If you missed it, Kyle Juszczyk and George Kittle, after Kittle's second touchdown, leaped into the front rows of like suites down back behind one of the end zones, and both their wives are waiting for them, and it was a fun moment that was captured by the Amazon cameras. What should we call that celebration? You can hit us up 888-957-9570. We've got 30 more minutes of overtime with you here on 95.7 The Game. We got game balls to hand out. out, and there's a lot of deserving guys that deserve game ball, so stay tuned for that as we roll along on overtime. Mark Randy, Kyle Madsen, Sterling Bennett, Niners victorious in Seattle. More OT next on 95.7 The Game.